He's a driver. Lil Wayne crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And live from the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, Missouri, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer with you. And Joey, I can't believe it's already here. It's Arch Madness.
And I'm just excited, Anthony, because we don't usually get to dress up for the Red Zone. We're out here suit and tie right now, courtside at the Enterprise Center. That's not usually the case. Usually it's me, you, and Scotty, and we're in our sweatpants down at ZND. So this is a nice little change of pace, but it's a good look. I'm more than excited. For anyone who hasn't sat courtside on a basketball court before, it is quite the sight looking up at all the lights.
It is quite the sight. We're here at the Enterprise Center, home of the St. Louis Blues, so it's pretty cool just to basically be on the ice at the Blues. Play it, watching everyone warm up, specifically the Bulldogs and the Redbirds. They are warming up in front of us. We'll get to them a little bit later, but for now, we got a great show planned. We got two fantastic press reporters that are going to come on the show later in the show. But first off, we're going to talk about some Redbird women's basketball and see how they're doing.
And they are obviously, we've been talking about it all year, Anthony, and they have done much better than the men in terms of being able to be competitive in conference. They have two more games left on their schedule. They've just, since we've seen you last, they beat Missouri State. They hosted and took them easily 78-66. And then were in a kind of a nail-biter with Southern Illinois at home. Ended up taking that win 66-65. So they're on a two-game tear right now. They've got Evansville, who doesn't have a win in the conference yet, and Indiana State left. Those are both away games. But coming into that, they've already clinched a game on Friday. They're not going to play Thursday for Hoops in the Heartland. So if they can win those last two games, they'll go in with a four-game win streak, a lot of momentum, and they won't play till Friday.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. With that last win against Southern Illinois at home, a great way just to send their seniors off in style. So to get that couple wins, as you mentioned, they're going to play a couple teams on the road in Indiana that are struggling a little bit, so it's very reassuring that they're going to play on Friday, really get that extra day of rest to kind of prepare. And I'm sure if you're at Coach Kristen Gillespie, that is huge to have your team just have that day off to kind of mentally prepare, get set, maybe get to the arena and just see what your competition could be like on Friday.
And I know I brushed over it a little bit talking about the Birds, but we have to remember that Missouri State coming into the game last Thursday against the Redbirds, they were a ranked team nationally. And the Birds upset them with ease, took them by over 10 points. And that I think that's just a testament to how this team is clicking super late in the season. There's a lot of experienced players on this team. So if there's any team going into the Missouri Valley Women's Basketball Tournament, I think the Birds are the most poised to make a run.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Just as you mentioned with Missouri State, being able to just upset them at home, coming in as the 21st ranked team in the nation. So Redbirds facing a bit of adversity as they went to Springfield earlier and they lost to the Lady Bears. But then to be able to come here and get the upset is huge for them, a big resume builder, and kind of tell the conference that they're here to play. They shouldn't be taken for granted. And it's just been some of those key players that have really helped him out, specifically Lexi Wallen and T.T. Madgett. Wallen averaging 17.2 points per game, Madgett averaging 15.5 points per game. They've been just their two solid key players, but especially Lexi Wallen, when the Redbirds are struggling, Joey, just down low, or in the perimeter, excuse me, they're able to just get the ball to her down low. She can get the basket, get the foul, and they just know that they can count on her.
and she has been an absolutely incredible force. I was just taking a look at the standings really quick. Illinois State right now, we are 9-7 in conference. UNI is 9-8. So moving forward, Bradley is the third place team. Illinois State's fourth. Bradley's third. They're 11-5. Even if we were to win these last two games, Bradley still got the lead because they've got the tiebreaker, took the conference series. So Illinois State basically has this fourth place seed in the tournament locked. So they will come in and play the five seed, looking like it'll be either UNI or Valparaiso. And so moving forward, if you're Kirsten Gillespie, how do you start to approach? Because we were at UNI called Hoops in the Heartland last year, and the Birds had a good run, but at the end of the day, they struggled to keep that momentum going. How do you avoid that from happening again this year?
I think it just starts with what they're going to want to do in practice, kind of more conditioning so that when they get into late in the third and into the fourth quarter, they're not fatigued and that they can battle through some of the fatigue, as we mentioned, just to try and get that so they can get a little bit more energy and I think just maybe more confidence in themselves. Like if they're down in a game, just say, hey, you know, we're going to be able to bounce back in a game like this. We can still win. We've played big teams all season. We were able to compete with them. I mean, just looking at the beginning of the season, they almost beat Marquette. Then they upset U of I in their place. Then they get a huge win against Missouri State, who made it to the Sweet 16 last year. So just kind of wins like that is boosting their confidence. Just, I think, probably what all the Redbirds want to do is just play Redbird basketball, just stick to their game plan and just be themselves.
And one player on this Redbirds team that sticks to their game plan more than anyone is Mary Crompton. We talked a lot about her earlier in this season, how she's one of the hardest working players on any ISU athletics team. She puts up shots daily. She's always in the gym, and that has really translated for her. She's shooting 374 from the field, 367 from three. Almost no disparity there. She leads the team in three-pointers, excuse me, and she has been one of my favorite players to watch this season, but she doesn't get talked about a whole lot.
Yeah, I would say so. She's that underdog that no one really wants to talk about. I think mainly because she redshirted last year due to the injury, but I think that just made her want to play even more, that she lost that year. She was really looking forward to playing, so just working her behind off just in practice day in and day out. She's the first one on the court. She's the last one to leave, which just shows how seriously she takes not only being a basketball player but wanting to help this team out and get as far as they can. So I would definitely agree that she is an underdog or someone that is kind of, I guess, overlooked a little bit or underlooked.
I would absolutely agree. She's one of my favorite players to watch. So coming up now, mentioned earlier, we've got Evansville and we've got Indiana State, both away games. The first one's tonight, actually. I failed to even look at that. So the women's basketball team is in Evansville tonight. That should not be too much trouble for them to take care of. But then this Indiana State game, that will say a lot about the Birds. Because Indiana State, the Sycamores are 3-13 in conference, so they're closing out the season with the two worst teams. And the Redbirds this season, the one downside to this team is over the course of the season, they've beaten the teams they should beat. They've beaten the Evansvilles and the Indiana States, but they're losing to the teams they should lose to, too. And so if they want to find tournament success, they have to find a way to be able to get over these teams who have better conference records than they do.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And even with the ones that aren't as good as like Evansville and Indiana State, not to go into it like we have the better record, so we're going to win by default. No, you still got to have that mindset no matter which team you are. You're going to play someone like Evansville as if they were like Missouri State. So it should be interesting to see how they're going to finish up these next two games.
And I'm very excited to watch. Obviously can't be watching tonight because we're here in St. Louis, but I'll watch Saturday. And I will, at the halftime of this game, I will absolutely check the score. I will let you know what's going on there.
And we'll keep you updated. We still got much more of the Red Zone coming. We will take a break. When we come back, we will sit down with one of our news and sports reporters. You're listening to the Red Zone at 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMD.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer with you guys. We are live from the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, and we are now joined by one of our news and sports guests, Joe Kennedy, on the show. Joe, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So, Joe, you wanted to talk about the NCAA basketball tournament just as a whole, not specifically the Missouri Valley Conference, but how it's could be shaping up come March Madness.
Yeah, this year in NCAA, it's been crazy. There's been no number one team that's been consistently number one throughout the whole year. It's in March, anything can happen, and this year is bound to be definitely one of the craziest years.
So, Joe, I want to ask you straight away, who are you looking at in the NCAA right now who could make some serious moves as far as a national championship goes?
Well, obviously teams like Kansas, Baylor, Duke, you know, obviously the Blue Bud teams. But other teams that consist of is like Michigan, who's obviously a Blue Bud, but right now they've been climbing up the ladder in the Big Ten. And basically any team in the Big Ten, there's about 10 to 11 teams that are going to make the tournament this year. And all of them have easily have a chance to get to the Sweet 16 with all the difficulties they've been going through in their schedules. But yeah, like we've been saying, there's just a lot of teams this year that have the opportunity to advance to the second round.
And you brought up the Big Ten, and I would be remiss as a good old Iowa boy myself to not bring up Iowa. They have had quite the year so far. Do you see them playing? So they're not the top of the Big Ten, but they're one of the few teams up there.
Oh, yeah.
How legit do you think they are, and do you see any long-term success for them?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think they're legit. Luka Garza, one of the top two player in the nation right now, Obi Toppin and Luka Garza, definitely the candidates for the Wooden Award top player. But Iowa, they have shooters around their whole team, and the crazy thing is they have about three players that are out for the whole year that would be either starting or getting a lot of quality minutes. So Iowa is definitely a team that can make a run. They've had some quality wins this year against some Big Ten teams, and to close out the year they got to go up against Illinois. And that's going to be a really big game for both teams because that can determine who gets a conference bye in the first round for the Big Ten Conference Tournament.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Just the way, especially U of I just has been playing these past few games, especially in the Big Ten, really trying just to make a case for themselves of why they should be one of the top teams in the Big Ten. But speaking of some of the top teams, what about Gonzaga? They've been a team, I believe they're in the WCC for the WAC. They've always been close to making it to the tournament, or not the tournament, but to make it to the national championship game. Do you think they might have enough this year to potentially make a national title run? Do you think they might be falling short?
Yeah, I think they definitely do this year. They got a lot of good players, like Killian Tilly, solid player there. And they've had some great wins, Oregon, Texas A&M, a quality team. But they've had some losses, only two losses, though. But they are in the WCC, which is one of the weakest conferences for a team of them.
And the loss that really scares me about Gonzaga is just a couple games ago, they lost big to BYU, who BYU is also a good team, don't get me wrong. But if you're going to be a top-caliber team, you have to beat teams like BYU.
Yeah.
And that, because that's the only other serious competitor in the WCC. I mean, unless you want to count St. Mary's, but
St. Mary's is usually pretty good. This year they're having a little off year. But BYU, I was watching a little bit of the game, and they just have shooters on that team that are able to knock down shots from anywhere. And it's crazy because they were knocking down shots that you don't even think like is possible. And they were guarding, playing great defense on Tilly. He had 18 points still, but they shut him down for the most part, BYU did. That's another team that has a great chance to do something big in March Madness.
And we'll keep it mid-major, moving from this really small conference to really small conference. But another team that has really caught the eye of a lot of people is Dayton.
Oh, yeah.
People are talking about Dayton like nobody's business right now. They're one of the highest-ranked teams. I'm confused because as somebody who doesn't follow college basketball to a T, I didn't really see this rise coming. All of a sudden, they came out of the woodwork, and they were just this phenomenal team that everybody is praising.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, they went to the Maui tournament in Hawaii, and they beat they had some good wins. They lost to Kansas in the final there, who was number four. They lost by about 6 points there. But Dayton's been a great program for the past 20 years. My cousin actually went there, and he played there. He went to the Elite Eight when they went to the Elite Eight.
Joe Kennedy's just going to sit over here name-dropping on us a little bit.
But, yeah, they've always had a great team. And this year, Obi Toppin, he's been unstoppable. And they just played against Rhode Island, who a bunch of people were thinking that, oh, Rhode Island's got their number. They're bound to win. Dayton goes there and beats them by almost 30 points.
And that's embarrassing if you're Rhode Island.
That's embarrassing. But Dayton, number three in the nation now, only two losses to Colorado, which was in overtime. So was the Kansas game. So both of their games were in overtime. The one in Colorado was at the United Center, and that game was insanely crazy. I'm pretty sure it might have went into two overtimes, and Colorado hit a really clutch three, I remember, to take the lead. But Dayton Flyers, they came out. People thought they were going to be ranked this year, but they definitely weren't expecting such a great performance as they have been putting out there this year.
Yeah, I would say so. Just coming into this season, you know, you expect the teams like Duke and UNC, Kansas, Michigan State, you know, all those guys to be the top dogs at the top, but no one really expected Dayton just to, no pun intended, but, you know, fly as high as they did to be third in the nation. As you mentioned, they lost to Kansas, and Kansas has been one of those teams that's been, I think, in the top 10.
They're number
almost
one,
the entire season. There's been in there, but as you mentioned, Dayton, I think one of those sleeper teams that I think most teams might, I guess, underestimate.
Yeah, even though they are they're number three in the nation, people still are going to underestimate them just because they're a mid-major. But the Atlantic 10's always had great teams, and pretty much every year the Atlantic 10, even though it is a mid-major, they usually do get an at-large bid with their conference tournament champion. So they've seen two last year, a couple years ago, they had about four teams in there. So they're a big conference, one of the biggest smaller conferences.
And one of the things we've seen a lot from NCAA men's basketball is the parity that has come out this season. People talking about how there's not a clear front runner. Like last year, everybody thought Duke with Zion and his supporting cast were going to take it easily. Obviously, that wasn't the case, but they were the clear front runner heading into the tournament. This season, not so much. I found this cool stat I wanted to share with you guys. Mm-hmm. I was just looking through some of the ranked teams this season who have not been ranked as highly as they are now in the last 20 years. You've got San Diego State, who's up there. They've had a great season. We just talked about Dayton. Maryland only one other time. Houston, Seton Hall, Penn State. So some schools that you don't really think about when you think of college basketball. And when I think about this, I think about the implications on the NBA draft.
Yeah.
And how that's going to look, because I feel like when we have the higher or the more touted bigger teams like the Duke of last year, we have the draft classes that reflect that.
Yeah.
And we just had a great draft class. So do you think there are any players in the NCAA right now who you can see going into the NBA and having an immediate Zion, Luka Doncic type impact?
Yeah, I would say Anthony Edwards out of Georgia. He's one of the most explosive players in the country, and he's had a great year there, just in a tough situation he's in. Georgia, the team supporting cast around him isn't as great. But,
what about Cassius Winston from Michigan
Cassius
State?
Cassius Winston. He's had a great year. A kind of a slower year than last year, though, because before, coming in this year, Cassius Winston was the Player of the Year, All-American Player of the Year in the NCAA before the season started. And he's had a good season, but he hasn't lived up to those expectations that I guess Michigan State even was having coming into the year. They've had a little of a down year, but they're still ranked, and they're still going to get to the tournament.
And they're still going to be
still
very competitive.
Izzo in March, which you can't count out.
Exactly.
Tom Izzo in March.
One guy who has really caught my attention this season is Marcus Howard. For Marquette, he leads the entire NCAA right now in points per game with 27.7. And while Marquette has not had the amount of success that they've had in previous years, they're still a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can sneak into the tournament, I think they are going to be dangerous.
Yeah, Marquette, that's like another strange situation too, because Marcus Howard, he's a great player, one of the best players in the country. They had a couple of twins who transferred out last year who were highly touted recruits, and they left. So Marquette just doesn't have the supporting cast around Marcus Howard. But when you have a player like that, you can do things in March, and definitely. And we saw him last year against Ja Morant, some of the two best players.
What an amazing head-to-head, and I'd love to see them go head-to-head in the pros,
too.
Yeah,
that would be crazy. But Marcus Howard is a great player.
Well, we will have to see. It should be an entertaining March Madness. I mean, they don't call it March Madness for a reason. There's upsets and really just anything can happen. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but we will take a quick break. When we come back, we will have Joe Vargas in the studio with our newscast and then Leo Stauder on the show to talk about something that you will have to wait to hear about.
Yeah, he's got a little surprise for you.
He is, yeah.
Something.
Yep, stay with us. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Back here at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, Missouri, Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, now Leo Stauder with you on The Red Zone, and it's interesting because we're at the Enterprise Center, home of the St. Louis Blues, but Leo Stauder, being a Chicagoland boy himself, he wants to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, so this should be interesting.
I wouldn't even call Leo a Chicago land boy. Leo's
Chicago.
He's basically from the city. So.
Well, I am from the city, of course. Southside born and raised.
And so obviously, where Anthony said we're talking about the Blackhawks. I read this piece on The Athletic by Mark Lazarus.
Okay.
About how the Blackhawks could go on this magical run.
All right.
And sneak into the playoffs.
Well, they won't, but proceed.
I mean, we've seen it with the St. Louis Blues. They came in beginning of the year last year. They were dead last in the league and then Stanley Cup champions. So anything can happen, but I would agree that with the Hawks, just the way they're at, they're missing some pieces to kind of make them like a coherent team to really get them on a stretch. So I don't know. Maybe another couple of years.
I think at this point in the season, the playoffs are lost with where the points are already distributed and the way their schedule is stacked out. They have too many teams to jump and too few games remaining. So I'd say this year's probably a lost cause, but you do look at how they're playing this year. They are playing well as a team. They aren't giving up in games. They're winning some games maybe that they shouldn't win. So the foundations are there for next year. They have some good young players that they're bringing along. They have the top-end forward talent. So I do think things aren't as dire as they may seem for some people.
And I want to get your opinions, because I haven't been able to talk to you about this yet. The Hawks made some moves at the deadline.
They did.
First of all, let's start with the Lehner move that shipped him out to Vegas, brought us Malcolm
Subban. Some thoughts about that one.
And Slava Denham, and then a pick. Obviously, there are a lot of fans who wanted Lehner to stick around even after this year. You might be one of them. but what's your overall takeaway from that trade?
Well, I think they overestimated the value of their own assets this year. They waited too long to move out both Lehner and Gustafson, so the teams that needed goalies and defensemen kind of already filled those needs, maybe except for Carolina, but according to sources, the Hawks were asking for too much from them, so Carolina filled other holes. So I think the Blackhawks overestimated the value they could get for those players and just kind of had to take the best of what was available at the time.
And you brought up Carolina, and that's a very interesting case study because they could have used a guy like Eric Gustafson, especially with Dougie Hamilton being out.
But then they added two other defensemen. They added Brady Shea, who's a lot better than Eric Gustafson, for a first-round pick, which is what the Hawks were asking at one point for Leonard and Gustafson. So they were able to get a better player for that price and then added another defenseman in Sami Vatanen, as well as adding a center in Vincent Trocheck. So I think they just chose to go another way.
And then you've mentioned the Gustafson trade. That one was a little more well-received by fans. Personally, I really liked the way Eric Gustafson played. I saw a lot of potential, especially as our defense has not been great this year. And the return for him wasn't spectacular.
No, well, if you looked at the moves like within the week leading up to it, there were some better moves made for defensemen, but the Blackhawks just couldn't pull the trigger on that trade and ship Gustafson out. So they were kind of the last team to move a defenseman, and at that point it was too late. They weren't able to capitalize on it.
And just
value.
With some of the defensemen, Duncan Keith, I believe he's still going on, but then Seabrook, he's out for the season, so they don't have him, although he is one of their veteran and more experienced defensemen, so who knows how long he's still going to be in there. But you want someone like Gustafson. We need those young defensemen to kind of build the youth around this team to try and get them back to the Stanley Cup winning franchise that they were and just really just be a young team.
Right, and I think the losing Gustafson, while it does hurt initially, I think that blow is softened by the emergence of Adam Boqvist,
I think he could be the do everything Gustafson was already able to do and then more. He's got a way higher ceiling right now. And that other defenseman they've been bringing in, Lucas Carlson, he's got some wheels too. He's a mobile defenseman. So I think they do have some younger defensemen that could potentially do more and have a higher ceiling than Gustafson was. Because Gustafson was in his late 20s, while Boquist and Carlson are both in their early 20s.
And then you've got another young defenseman in Slater Cuckoo as well. And so defensively, they've got a nice, they've got some promise. This does, these moves do give the Hawks a little more room when we get to the offseason, because signing Leonard was a big what if for the Hawks,
right,
in terms of how much cap he's going to eat up. But now with guys like Dylan Strome and Drake Kajula up for contract, do you stay in-house and make sure you got those guys secured, or do you try to go out and get a more established forward?
Well, I think if you look at teams that are competing for Stanley Cups, they do have that depth, and it's hard to find a player like Dylan Strome in free agency. Players of that caliber just aren't available every year, and if they are, you're going to have to pay, you break the bank to sign them. So I think you're going to have to keep Strome, keep Kajula. They got to sign Kubalik as well. I think they just need to keep growing their forward core from within, and then maybe add one or two more pieces when they do become available for a cheap rate. Because if you look at teams that are winning cups, they have that deep center, that center depth. So the Hawks have Taves, Kirby Dach, Ryan Carpenter, Dylan Strome, David Camp. They have the center depth there. If Jeremy Collins has been playing Strome on the wing a lot, but if he actually puts him at center on the third line, he could really break the games open by playing against other teams' third, fourth lines and just go nuclear and just rack up the points from that.
And I know you said that there's not a whole lot of promise for the Hawks this season. Just looking at the point spread right now, they have gone on a nice little three-game tear here.
That is right.
They're 5-5 in their last 10. They've got 68 points, which is putting them, they are still last in the Central, which is not where you want,
right,
to be.
I believe it puts them 6 points out of the second wild card spot.
But 6 points out of the wild card spot is not
it's
insurmountable.
Not, yeah.
It's not insurmountable.
Yeah, but they also have, I think it's four teams to jump as well. So you need, the Hawks need to basically win as many games as they can. And while the teams ahead of them, like Minnesota, Nashville, Calgary, need to lose a lot too. So that's, you're relying on other teams to lose as well.
And that's asking Nashville to lose has not been a hard task as of recently. They're not doing so hot. But I do see what you're saying. It's a long shot, but it's nice to believe.
It's possible, and it's fun to just think that they can make it. So I'm trying to stay positive here, but right now the math isn't shaking out just right.
Yeah, I would kind of agree that this year might not be the year that, although the Hawks, they go on these stretches, you know, with these win streaks, you know, then they go on stretches like the Predators have where they're going on 3-4 game losing streaks. And
right, they're very inconsistent this
year. If you're the Hawks, you want to have some consistency and not really rely on other teams to control your own destiny.
Right.
You want to control your own destiny so that you can compete for.
And that's the thing
club,
about the
yes.
Hawks. They have controlled their own destiny this year. They started the month of October with a 7-game homestand, and they squandered that. They had 2 regulation wins in the month of February, when at crunch time, when you could have made up all this ground, when you were playing. You had that 5-game road trip of 4 teams, since they played Winnipeg twice, 4 teams that were ahead of you, and you came out with 4 points in that whole road trip. So the opportunities have been there. They just haven't capitalized on them.
And the consistency has been another the big thing. There hasn't been a more inconsistent position for the Hawks this year than goaltending. Corey Crawford, a lot of fans are calling for his removal, somebody else to come in and take his place. Obviously, they're committed to him now with Lehner gone.
I have just been, this season, the Blackhawks picked Corey Crawford's replacement in Robin Lehner. And then what does Corey Crawford do? He does what he always does. When Lehner's out here bust-tossing the defense, criticizing the team to the media, complaining just after every bad game, Corey Crawford's keeping his mouth shut and outplayed Lehner, took his job back, and forced the Blackhawks to trade Lehner pretty much. So I'm all here for Corey Crawford. Corey Crawford is the most underappreciated athlete, not only in the NHL, but probably in the city of Chicago. So I'm all here for Corey Crawford. We respect Corey Crawford on this show.
And Patrick Kane, Joe Kennedy likes that as well. Patrick Kane had a quote the other day talking about how Corey Crawford is still an elite goaltender in the NHL. But there is something to be said about the injuries.
There is. That's the main
concern.
The
big concern.
And I will
for me and a lot of fans.
That. And you do worry about that, but you see the way the league's going where most teams have a 50-game and a 30-game split between their goalies. So if the Blackhawks maybe next year want to go maybe a 40-40-game split with Leonard or with Crawford and a backup goalie, whether that's Subban or Colin Delia, or maybe they go outside, find another rental option. Because if there's one thing Stan Bowman is good at scouting, it has been goaltending. So I am confident the Hawks can find another option to go with Crawford if that's the route they choose to go next year.
Although I wouldn't mind seeing how Malcolm Subban performs. He's one of those young goalies, and
right.
He comes from a family of athletes. Yeah. So just he's been competitive with his brothers, PK. Who's the other one?
Jordan Subban.
Yeah.
He's in, I believe, the AHL. But
is he Montreal?
He's been all over the place. I'm not sure.
With PK, he started with Montreal. Then he went to, I believe it was Nashville.
Now he's on the Devils. And I think Jordan is in the Montreal farm system now.
That's wild.
It's a small world. But you're absolutely right. I do like the promise Malcolm Subban shows. And I think if the Hawks can solidify the back end, solidify the goaltending, get a little more consistent play,
right.
I think they're going to find themselves right back in the playoff picture. If not this year, next year for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's what I mean. They are closer than people are giving them credit for being next year. They have the forward depth. Maybe they're a couple defensemen away, and if they could just keep the goaltending consistent, because that's just what you need in this league to contend. You need defense and goaltending. And I think the Hawks are close to having both of those.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays. Obviously, this won't be the year, but maybe could it be next 3-4 seasons? Maybe we could see him back in the playoffs. We'll have to see how it all plays out. Should be an interesting one. We will take one more break. When we come back, we are going to talk about Redbird men's basketball in anticipation.
We're watching him warm up right now. I got Matt Chastain's beautiful flow looking at me right now.
Oh, my goodness. So. He has some nice flow. I would probably say best flow on the team.
That's top tier lattice right there, Freddy.
Best flow in the valley.
I would say some best.
I'd put it up there. Birds didn't get a whole lot of recognition around the valley this year.
No.
But best hair has got to go to Matt Chastain.
Yeah, if they have like an all hair team or something for the valley, yeah, for sure, put Chastain. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some Redbird men's basketball. You're listening to the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
Back here at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Now it is the moment you've all been waiting for. Joey, we finally get to talk about Redbird men's basketball as we've been seeing them warm up basically for the past hour.
And thank goodness, Anthony, because that's what's been on my mind all day. We've been prepping to do this game, and I cannot wait. They're doing handshakes with the Drake team right now, and I am so excited. There's nothing like playoff college basketball.
Yeah, I would say so. Arch Madness, they call it like that for a reason. It is amazing to see. It'll be Redbirds and the Bulldogs. Redbirds didn't have the strongest of seasons, as everyone would kind of attest to. But, you know, they did the best that they could.
And we are going to take a quick break here for the anthem in the stadium, but we will be right back. Do not go anywhere. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Redbird basketball, only on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
Back here at the Enterprise Center after a relatively early national anthem.
We were a little thrown off, but we got back on track, and now we're ready to talk some Redbirds basketball.
Finally, we can talk Redbird men's basketball. As we mentioned before the break, not the strongest of seasons for the Redbirds. Struggled a little bit. They are the 9 seed in the conference tournament, taking on the 8 seed Drake Bulldogs. Not the most consistent team that we've seen. We saw at the beginning of the season they beat Belmont and then Little Rock. They were 2-0. We were thinking this could be a promising season despite some of the inexperienced players that we had that had to sit out last year due to the transfer rules. But then all of a sudden they went to that tournament where they played teams like Cincinnati. They just started to fall a little bit, really couldn't get things going. And same thing in MVC play, just they were struggling, really didn't get a win in 2020 until mid-February.
And it has been a tough road for these Redbirds, especially for Dan Muller, who has had so much prowess in the past couple years coaching this, what has been a very successful Redbirds team up until this season. But I would be remiss if we didn't point out some of the talent that we've seen from this team this year. Obviously, Zach Copeland, who is near the top of the valley in points. He has been the only bright spot for in some games on this otherwise very, very dark Illinois State team.
I would say so. Leads the team with 14.6 points per game. He's got a 39.9 field goal percentage, 38.3% from beyond the arc. Without a doubt, just one of the guys the Redbirds have been counting on. But something I think that should be interesting next season is some of the youth that we've seen from the freshmen on this team, specifically DJ Horn and Antonio Reeves.
And I agree. Antonio Reeves especially, he was named MVC All-Freshman Team, or All-Bench Team, my apologies. And he has had a very good season. He got a little banged up in the eye in the season finale against Evansville, so we'll see if that affects his play at all. But you're right, it will be interesting to see younger guys like Antonio Reeves. Ray Odowu is one of them who's coming up. Matt Chastain still got another year left. Dedrick Boyd's got a couple. DJ Horn. So there is a lot of youth and room for growth on this Redbirds team. We just have not seen it this year.
Yeah, and it kind of was a little disappointing to watch, even just as a Redbird fan, just calling games, you know, just after the struggling seasons that we have, we all just keep saying, you know, this is going to be the year. They're going to succeed. They're going to go to the championship and make the NCAA tournament. And then just there's just something that they're missing that is just preventing them from clicking. And I think a big part of it is just the amount of inexperience on the team, because I think other than Zach Copeland and maybe Ray Odowu and Chastain, a lot of these guys that are coming in, like Fisher and Horn and Reeves and Jai and Torres, really haven't played in or haven't seen action in Arch Madness.
And so that's going to serve them. That's going to serve to their detriment here tonight. And one thing that I do want to bring up to you, because it's been a talk with a lot of fans, we hear Steve C's talking about it a lot, is what the future holds for the relationship between Dan Muller and this program.
Yeah, it's been a question people have been asking all season. We've seen people at the games questioning with them. There was one sign I saw, it said, "Can Dan?" There was one fan that wasn't happy. I think there's a Twitter account. So fans are kind of questioning whether or not he should leave. I think he's had some struggling years, and I think the big thing is that they really haven't been to the tournament since 1998, and that was when Dan Muller was on this team and got the last game-winning basket over Tennessee, I believe, in overtime. But I think really next year might be the tell-all season, that make-or-break season for him, if really he's going to stay or go, because I think he's earned the respect of fans just as someone that not only has played here but has coached here, grew up in this community, loves the Redbirds, loves the team, loves the fans. So he's earned that respect. Just people, you know, are just unhappy mainly because the team ain't succeeding on the court.
And that makes a lot of sense. When your team is winning, it's much easier to say, look at how well the coach is doing. But when the team goes south, where's the first finger you can point, you know? But I think Dan Muller has a great relationship with the fans. He has a great relationship with us in the media.
He does,
He's
yes.
One of my favorite people in Redbirth Bird Athletics to talk to. So I think that he will stick around based on the fact that people like him. But if we don't start seeing more success out of the team in the next couple of years, he's the highest paid employee of Illinois State University. So there are a lot of eyes scrutinizing how well this team does.
Yeah, they are. So all eyes will be on them. And I think just some of it might just have to be probably this year, as we talked about a little bit, just the inexperience. I mean, we saw in years past they had people like Keyshawn Evans, Phil Fain, Malik Yarbrough, guys that were experienced that could really carry them, guys that they could count on. Even the year before we came in, when they had Paris Lee, Mikhail McIntosh, Tony Willis, they were going in, almost got snubbed, or they got snubbed of the NCAA tournament, really thought they should have been there, and I think that's when it really clicked for Dan Muller. And I think the reason they've been struggling is because they're playing tougher non-conference opponents, and that's really just Dan Muller's message to the NCAA saying, hey, you know, we've been a strong team. Give us some tougher opponents. We want to be recognized, and we want to compete in the big dance.
And I think that's very fair. But then when you have a down year like this, where the Birds are not performing up to fans' expectations, then it really becomes hard to make that statement. And as you hear the Drake Bulldogs fight song right now behind me, and so we're getting ready. And heading into this game, there's a lot to prove. Do you think ISU has anything left in the tank to take on Bradley and move on to tomorrow?
I think they have a little bit left. I think there's a chip on their shoulder, mainly because they're the 9 seed. But they were saying in their opening press conference on Monday that they don't feel like they're average 9 seed. They feel they might be one of the sleeper teams in the tournament. But the main thing I think there is a chip on their shoulder is because last year in Arch Madness, they faced the Bulldogs, and the Bulldogs sent them home, I believe, on Friday. So Redbirds really want to try and get some revenge. They split the series in the regular season. Each team won at home, so Redbirds are coming in, bit of a win streak. Bulldogs are coming in. They're looking to end a big three-game losing streak. They lost to the Birds, then they lost to UNI and Loyola, who are the top two teams in the conference.
That's understandable.
Yes, it is understandable. So they're really coming in with a chip on their shoulders. We're really wanting to end that. I think it's just going to come down to who is going to play better basketball and really who's going to want it more.
And I don't know who will, because the Redbirds are a thirsty team, and especially if you look at senior Zach Copeland. He has been an incredible presence on this team. He leads the whole team in points, and we'll look for him to lead the Birds today.
And well, looks like that will just about wrap it up for this week's edition of the Red Zone. We thank everyone so much for joining us here at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis. Although, stick with us, we will just have a quick break, and then when we come back, we will have live coverage between the Illinois State Redbirds and the Drake Bulldogs in this opening game in Arch Madness play. Oh, Arch Madness played is the 8th-seeded Drake Bulldogs against the 9-seed Illinois State Redbirds. We will see what they can do. Should be an interesting game. It's starting to fill up. Big thank you to our reporters Leo Stoddard and Joe Kenny for being on the show. On behalf of Joey Dwyer and myself, you've been listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.